Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us right now at 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yes, Pinocchio was right. When you lie, your nose grows. Well, not exactly. But we'll talk about some interesting research and how the nose changes when you tell a fib.
The Pinocchio effect.
Absolutely. You heard it here. And believe it or not, when you're stressed and you're worried about your being stressed, that may actually cause an increased risk of heart attacks. So worrying that you're worrying may be the problem right there, and
it's a rather something I'm an expert in, by the way. What's our recipe?
Spicy mini quiche cups, delicious, easy, simple, fun. Great to serve at your next party.
800-462-7413, toll free. Let's get to the phones now, Zorba. A listener with us in Logan, Utah. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I have a question. I'm middle-aged, and I do a lot of moving and lifting and bending. And I want to know, how do those icy hot patches work? I put them on my back, and I swear it really makes a difference. I don't have back spasms. I'm just curious how they work and why they work.
Oh, sure. I'll tell you if you tell me what middle-aged is defined as. That's what I want to know. What is middle-aged?
56.
Is 56 is middle-aged?
Yep.
I would agree with you. And you know what, I've noticed is the older I get, the more the definition of middle-aged seems to change. So I would agree with you about 56.
I do feel old some days.
Well, you know, I had a guy in my office the other day. I mean, literally, he's in my office and he said, oh, I just don't know. I don't have any energy anymore. I just can't get up and move. And I said, you should have lots of energy. He said, you know, since I turned 31, I just don't have any energy at all. And I thought, you don't know what you're missing.
Yeah, just wait.
Just wait. That's exactly it. And I mean, I kid you not. It's exactly what he said. So getting back to the issue at hand, which is your back and these icy patches. These are called counter irritants. And they're patches, and they're also things such as Bengay, Icy Hot. And they also are things such as Vicks VapoRub
that
my mother
that.
Would write.
We don't have that around anymore, do we?
We absolutely have it.
We do.
And when I had a terrible cold about 2 years ago, I insisted that Penny go out and get me Vicks VapoRub. She came back with a generic Vicks VapoRub, and I said, it doesn't smell the same. She turned around, went back to the drugstore, and bought the real stuff. And you know what? It gave me such relief because it reminded me of Mom.
My mother used to stuff that stuff in my nose.
Yeah, in the nose. That's exactly it. In the nose and the chest at work. But
anyway.
Counter irritants change the way the brain feels about pain. That's actually what they do. So it's the perception of pain that counts. You're paying attention to the heat or the warmth. It makes you feel good. It may remind you, just like Vicks VapoRub reminds me of Mom, the sensation of warm makes you feel good. And so you're often able to tolerate pain better. Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's how they work.
Funny you say that about the smell, because when my kids use it, they complain about the smell, and I never thought, you know, the newer products have less of a smell.
So
in some ways you're saying the smellier ones are better.
Well, the smellier ones are better for you, and the smellier ones might not be better for your kids, because the smell itself is not what's actually doing the counter irritant, but the smell itself may bring up memories of comfort.
So it's a kind of subjective thing.
Absolutely. There's no doubt it's subjective. There's no doubt that some of it is sort of under automatic control because there's sensation of warmth and heat. And there's something else about putting a patch, even if there's nothing on it, over something that is painful and that for some reason helps us tolerate pain. So
if I bought one of those big, large Band-Aids, which were a lot less expensive, in theory that would work?
It might work. You brought up a good point. That might exactly work. I think what you ought to do is try that. And another recommendation is there's something called Dr. Scholl's Moleskin. And Moleskin is used to pad the feet when there are blisters. It's very inexpensive. It doesn't cost very much at all. Put that right over the sore spot in the back. And I never thought about it until now. That may work too. And if there's one thing I like to do, it's save money.
It'd be a bargain. Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck.
Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for the call at 1-800-462-7413.
You know, when I save money right now, you had the nice smile on your face. You know, some people might call me cheap.
Yeah.
Some people might call me frugal. I am not cheap. I am not frugal. I am simply someone who pays attention. I'm just watch my pennies.
That's not cheap. 800-462-7413. A Spooner, Wisconsin listener is with us now. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Zorban.
Oh, sure.
This is really a thrill for me. I've never called into a show like this before.
Oh, cool.
But the deal here is that we bought a half of a homegrown pig this fall, and the meat has been just absolutely beautiful. We decided to render the lard, and we got 3 quarts of this beautiful white rendered lard. We don't want to jeopardize our good health, but we would like to use this lard once in a while in a pie crust or maybe for something else once in a while. What do you think? The Internet now is telling us some pretty positive statements about lard. But we thought we would check with you because sometimes the Internet is not always accurate.
Yeah, before Zorba answers, I've got to say this is the first time in my life I've ever heard the words beautiful and lard mentioned in the same sentence.
Beautiful and lard. I love it. I love it. Beautiful and lard. Nice white lard. I'll never forget we have really good friends, and we moved to Madison. They raised a pig. Mm-hmm. And before we met them, they actually had started raising the pig, and they named the pig Penny, which
everyone.
Kenny's name. Now, Internet. Is all information in the Internet good? Of course not. We all know that. Mm-hmm. Garbage in, garbage out. For $2 a month, you can make the most beautiful website and you can claim that the sky is green.
Mm-hmm.
Give a lot of good material. And if people believe you, well, they will believe anything.
What about this one? Screen.
You know, I don't think it bothers you in a pie crust when you're taking, you know, if you're having a piece of pie. I think that's okay. But if you're having lard all the time, I think it's not okay. And it doesn't matter what's on the Internet. It's a rendered animal product. It's filled with saturated fat. It is not good for you. But, I mean, are you eating half a pie every day? Well, that's a lot of lard. If you're having that apple pie on a special occasion or once a week, I don't think that amount of lard is going to kill you at all. And I think people, frankly, go off the deep boat with this. And they go, well, I'm not going to ever touch that at all. I'm never going to make a pie crust with lard because it's bad for you. I think, I'm for moderation, and I love apple pie, and sometimes the best crust, I have been told, I don't make pie crust, is made with lard. So, So what are you going to do with your lard?
Well, we thought we would use it for pie crust. Somebody asked me if I was going to have a lard sandwich, and I said, I think so.
That's pretty disgusting.
That doesn't sound too bad.
But, you know, that is what people used to have years ago in Wisconsin.
I know.
With onions. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother used to make it with chicken fat. She used to make a chicken fat sandwich with onions. She would eat it, but I was not my thing when I was 7. So it's not something I would eat. You know, the other thing is, of course, you know, pork itself in moderate amounts is okay. But when we get back to the actual pig itself, large amounts of meat we know are associated with more heart disease, stroke, and so on. And so, you know,
we just don't want to do that.
Right. So, you know, we still have to think about what the rest of the animal is like. So.
True.
Thanks a lot.
Zorba.
So did it feel okay calling us?
Sure.
Oh, great. Good. Well, thanks so much for doing just that. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, I'm going to say I'm waiting for the recipe. When the recipe comes and we finish doing it, I'm going to rush home and actually make that recipe for dinner.
Is my
nose growing?
Your nose is growing, Tom. Your nose is growing. That's absolutely the case. So, you know, everyone knows Pinocchio. You know, the Pinocchio story pretty much. So, you know, every time he told a lie, his nose grew and grew and grew. And there was Geppetto. And, you know, it's the whole thing. But researchers in Spain looked at the nose of people who were lying, and they discovered that there are changes that occur in the nose.
Not exactly growing.
Well, it doesn't grow at all. But they looked at looking at people who were rating subjective experiences. They did a few things. So first of all, they would show you a picture and say, do you like this? Do you love this? Do you hate this? And this is artwork. And they would show you scenes, for instance, of, we'll say downtown Tokyo, Shinjuku, which is a busy place. Would you like to go there and walk around Shinjuku? And then they'll show you a scene of the countryside. Would you like to be in the countryside and show you movies? In the meantime, they were measuring functional MRI scanning to see where in the brain was actually lit up, what was actually being activated. And then they looked at thermographic cameras looking at people's noses. In other words, measuring the heat in the nose at the end of the nose.
I don't see how they know whether the person's lying or not when they say.
Well, first of all, at the end of it, they would ask people and they would say, you know, sometimes they would lie and sometimes they wouldn't, but you wouldn't tell them before.
Oh, I see.
In other words, you would say, they don't know anything about you, and they might say, do you love cooking? And you would say, I love cooking.
Yeah.
And you'd be lying. So in other words, you subjectively rated it. They also looked to see whether or not they could predicted based on the MRI scans and based on the nose. But you told them at the end what you actually thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this isn't too surprising. Kind of like blushing.
That's right. Yeah. It was like blushing, but people didn't blush. What they discovered were there were subtle changes in the nose, just at the end of the nose, which is very, very vascular.
Yeah.
Even though people did not have a full blush, you and I would not have noticed these changes. But a thermographic camera that measures heat, infrared heat, would have noticed that when you say a lie, your nose is actually turning red to the camera.
So I could carry one of these thermographic cameras around and flash it at whoever I'm talking with and know whether that person's telling the truth.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely. And so, and I think this might be very useful in things like asking your children what they're doing at home and whether or not they're telling you the truth. You just pull out the camera and you say, okay, buddy.
Yeah. There's a good family.
Okay, buddy.
Good parent-child relationship.
That's right.
Ha! I caught you again.
That's right. Yeah. It sounds like one of those childhood educators that used to be on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Moving right along.
I bet you like that a lot.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, listener with us in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I just left a job waiting tables full time. It was great. I was staying fit. I was walking 50 miles a week. It felt really good. I just picked up a job. It's a desk job, so I'm sitting in my chair for 40 hours a week. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for exercises that can help me keep the weight off, help me keep from getting too fat. But there's a catch. My last couple of weeks at the restaurant, I developed tendonitis in my left Achilles.
Oh.
Yeah, so bearing in mind that I can't walk very much right now, what are some good exercises that I can do to stay trim?
Oh, sure. First of all, how did you develop the tendonitis? Do you know?
As far as I know, it was just from walking so much working.
Okay, so first of all, I have a few recommendations, and then we'll talk about the weight. For the tendonitis, if you go to our website, zorbapastor.org, I'll put on some good tendonitis exercises that I find either on YouTube or other exercises that will be there. I happen to like YouTube because often there will be some good exercises. There are some stretching exercises that are good for tendonitis. That's number one. Number two, you don't want to run with tendonitis, but you want to do something that allows you to actually exercise and do things. Swimming is one thing you can do, but the elliptical can be great for tendonitis. It can be wonderful.
Okay.
So long as you do your warm-ups before the elliptical and sometimes the warm-up afterward, you can control things and you don't have the trauma of hitting that treadmill all the time. So the elliptical is a great exercise to do for this, but you've got to do the stretches, and as I said, I'll put that on the website. Number two, anti-inflammatories. I love them. Are you taking them at all?
No, I haven't lately, not since I left the restaurant.
Okay, I would recommend 2 Aleve tablets, generic Aleve. Don't spend your money on the name brand, twice a day. And that will make a significant difference. It will reduce the inflammation in the tendon, which is one of the things you want to do. That would be the second thing I want to do. Before I go on to the weight, the third thing I would do is if you've had an Achilles tendonitis, you never want to take a drug, an antibiotic such as Cipro. Ciprofloxacin is in a group of antibiotics that can actually cause an Achilles tendonitis and an Achilles rupture. And if you go to your doc's office, have your doctor put it as an intolerance so that if it's done in the electronic medical record, you won't actually get this drug. In other words, because it would be a drug that would have side effects. Now, let's talk about weight. Weight. Half the self-help books that are sold in this country today are weight self-help books. There are two things with weight. It's the amount of food, calories you put in and the amount of exercise out. Now, if you're on the treadmill full tilt for 30 minutes, it doesn't equal a Big Mac. No. Now, I'm not saying you eat Big Macs all the time, but the Big Mac is a unit of food that we can all relate to because we've all had a Big Mac. And if anyone hasn't had a Big Mac, try it sometime. It's really, really good. It's delicious. I love a Big Mac and fries, but that's about 900 calories, so it's a lot of calories. So you want to look at all your calories, and you want to look for the little things. 250 extra calories a day are 3 to 5 pounds of weight at the end of the year. That's all. So don't look for the big things. Look for all the little ways that you're getting calories, because when you were moving back and forth in the in the restaurant, waiting tables, you were exercising and you were eating probably to sort of keep up with your energy. And as you know, if you do that, you're going to gain weight. So exercise is critical, but calories are even more critical than exercise.
Okay.
How do you like your new job?
I'm liking it a lot. It's working out really well.
Cool.
Great.
Cool. Great. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Bye-bye. Zorba time now for another humbling edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's disagreement comes to us from Joan in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and deals with cranberries. She writes, "Hi, Zorba and Tom. I was listening to a recent recipe, and the listener mentioned how nutritious dried cranberries were. I just had to write you a note. I love cranberries, but alas, when I looked at the nutrition facts, the only good thing they have is fiber. No vitamins, only carbs. So now I use them sparingly. The listener may have been thinking of raw cranberries, but by the time they've been dried and processed, all the good things are gone. Salsa has the same problem. All those tomatoes, but no vitamins. Thanks for all the information you send over the wires."
Yeah. Well, I disagree with everything she said.
Oh, really?
Was it a she?
Yes,
tell?
Joan.
I disagree with everything she said. I don't think that she's right. So, respectfully disagree. That's how we say
it. Well, she looked it up.
So, well, she may look it up, but maybe she looked it up on the web. Remember? Garbage in, garbage out. Yeah. Let's talk about salsa first, cranberry second.
Okay.
Salsa is chopped up tomatoes. Now, there are estrogens. We know that vegetables are good. It's not just the vitamins in there. And when you make salsa, you don't necessarily get rid of all the vitamins. There are vitamins in tomatoes. So, if it's fresh salsa, you will have more vitamins than if it's processed salsa.
Yeah.
But you still get vitamins, and we know that 5 to 7 servings of fruits and veggies a day are useful to you. And frankly, it's not just the vitamins, it's the fruits and veggies. There's stuff in there that we don't know that Mother Nature puts in.
Mystery stuff.
No, it's the mystery. You hit it right in the head. It's mystery stuff. And it's the same thing with cranberries. Yes, they have a lot of sugar in them, but there is some fiber in them because you eat them, you chew them. That's fiber. It's not a huge amount of fiber. But there's something about cranberries because we know that cranberry juice helps women with urinary tract infections, and we don't know what it is in the cranberry juice that did it.
So are you agreeing no vitamins, only carbs?
No, I am not agreeing that it's no vitamins, because that implies that there are vitamins that we don't know that are phytoestrogens and minerals that are in there. So no, I think that the real issue here is this. There are, if you eat raw fruits and vegetables that haven't been processed, that are kept well fresh on the way to the store, that's sort of the optimal way to get your vitamins, your minerals, your phytoestrogens, and all the things about fruits and vegetables. And the more processed they are on the whole, the less you're going to have. But I think that just looking up one thing such as vitamins in fruits and vegetables sort of goes against the grain of the fact that we know that these things are good for us. And there are, as you said, mystery elements that we don't understand.
Well, if you think our nutrition facts are all dried up, just send your corrections along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have a very spicy recipe coming up, which looks good to me. Lots more of your calls, of course, some more interesting information, one of our topics to talk about, and, of course, our medical myth buster. Lots of great reasons for you to hang around here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number is 800-462-7413. Callers waiting, but an open line for you at 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, before our next call, our recipe, this one for spicy mini quiche cups. And thanks to our program producer, Gabrielle Pedriani, we have One each, right in front of us.
And it's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
It smells delicious.
And I love it. It smells delicious. It's pretty to look at.
Yeah.
Do you like quiche?
No, not that much. But,
no.
But this recipe
sounds
great.
You know,
it's
funny. I think of quiche as a girly food, not a guy food.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Why should I think of it as a girly food? I
that
mean,
doesn't
women,
make sense, but I have the same
You know, real
sense,
men
yeah.
don't eat quiche.
Yeah.
I mean, would that be like a book?
Yeah. Quiche for her, beef for me.
Yeah, just quiche for her, beef for me. You know, I think it's also because quiche was like the thing back in the 80s or 90s, if you'd go to somebody's house and say, oh, I'm serving quiche. It was,
yeah.
What do you think? It was like hot stuff?
I was always very disappointed. In fact, I never wanted to go to those
that's
houses.
Right. That's right. That's right. Oh, they're having quiche. Oh, I think I'll stay home, honey.
Yeah.
Said, I'll have my
But this is different.
Grill.
This looks really great.
Oh, this is really good. And yeah. Also, it's not as if quiche is girly food. I mean, why would
of
you?
Course
you
not.
Know, of course
no,
not.
Of course not.
Of course not. I don't want to be sexist about food. I think that, you know, we're
even
very.
Though, even though we were. You don't want to be
were.
Now.
We are sexist about food.
Oh.
I still associate that.
Okay.
But that's dumb and stupid because okay. We shouldn't be that
Spicy
way.
Spicy mini quiche cups.
Yes. Okay. Here we go. Start out with nonstick cooking spray. Now, right. You know what the advantage of nonstick cooking spray is?
Stuff doesn't stick when you...
That's right. You know something? Nothing can get past you. I am so amazed.
Who says I don't know anything about cooking?
That's right. That's right. Who says you don't know anything about cooking? That's right. I'm not going to ask you any more questions about
Good.
This recipe because you're on a
that's
roll.
That's the extent of it.
you're on a roll.
Okay.
But it cuts down on the fat. That's why
Okay.
4 sheets of phyllo pastry dough.
4 sheets of phyllo pasty. What's phyllo pasty?
Not phyllo pasty.
I misspoke.
Phyllo is when you eat Greek food and other things that have very, very thin crusts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very incredibly thin dough that is and it's impossible to make at home unless you do. And you use it to make crunchy stuff.
Got it.
I don't think I explained that very well at all, but that's what. Look it up.
Yeah, okay.
Look it up. Do you know how to spell phyllo?
P-H-Y-L-O.
Yeah, only because you're looking at it. Otherwise,
or
I'd probably spell
it.
Or is
it a Y in there? Okay.
Okay. 3 eggs.
Two L's, by the way, and a Y. I totally missed the spelling. 3 eggs.
A half cup of egg substitute.
Half a cup of egg.
Oh, excuse me. 1 cup of egg substitute.
A cup of egg substitute.
That's right.
Okay.
A 1/2 package of frozen chopped spinach, 6 ounces.
A half package frozen chopped spinach. I have to say that when I'm cooking spinach, mm-hmm. when somebody is cooking spinach, I like the frozen chopped better than anything
else.
Oh,
so do I. I like it too. I wonder why.
Obviously, without cooking, it's nice in salads.
Yeah.
But frozen chops taste so much better to me than the whole. I don't know why that
would
be.
How about canned peas? But they taste totally different than frozen peas.
Yeah.
Canned peas, one of my mother's 4 vegetables that she would serve. Yeah. She'd go round robin. Canned peas, string beans, corn. And I don't remember what the last one was. Wax beans. That was the last one.
And
she did one after another. So I know, like on
Thursday. But not canned wax beans, is it?
Canned wax beans. That my mother
was there such a thing?
Yes, my mother was. God bless her. A Not a good cook.
Yeah.
Now, you know what? My mother and your mother, they both neither of them were
high. My mother had an excuse. She used to work about 10 hours a day.
Yeah. Well, my mother worked in a department store. She worked in a department store.
Anyway,
10
moving
hours.
Right along.
Third of a cup of red pepper, green, yellow, orange, whatever, you could use those. Yeah. You could use green pepper if the red peppers are too expensive.
Got it. Third of a cup of some pepper or other.
Right, of a pepper. Two-thirds of a jalapeno pepper minced. And you could use a whole one if you like it hot. Like it hot.
Ah, me. Third or maybe
two-thirds
a whole
or
cup
a whole
of red pepper, yep. Green or minced.
Quarter of a cup of diced onions.
Quarter cup of diced onions.
Mm-hmm. One clove, crushed clove.
A crushed clove.
A third of a teaspoon of salt, pepper, and cayenne.
A third of a little tea, salt, pepper mm-hmm. ground, and cayenne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all these two different peppers.
Yeah.
One and a third teaspoons of cumin, ground cumin.
One and a third little tea, ground cumin.
And if you like cumin, you could add a little bit more. I happen to love cumin.
Okay.
Two teaspoons of thyme.
Two little tea
of thyme. One third of a cup of reduced fat feta cheese.
A third of a cup reduced fat feta cheese.
And eight cherry tomatoes.
Eight cherry tomatoes. So, and I got to say, when you went through this, I probably botched up about half of these ingredients
but that's okay.
Listeners were able to deal with it.
I am sure. And they know that when you go to the store and you make this today, like you said, that you'll get everything right. And you know what, Tom? If you actually go home and make this, my jaw will drop. Don't worry about it. I was going to say I'll pay you $100, and then I thought, no, because then you'll actually go home and make it.
No, I wouldn't.
Really? Not for
$100? nothing could motivate me to get in the kitchen. $1,000? Maybe $1,000.
I mean, come on. Everyone's got their price for making a recipe.
Okay.
You know, it's not as if you're doing something illegal. Heat the oven to 350. Then spray muffin tins, because these are, remember, little quiches, cups with nonstick spray. Unroll the phyllo dough, cut into stacks that are four stacks widthwise. Then across the center, create four squares. So you're making eight squares, rather, of the phyllo dough.
Mm-hmm.
Lay one sheet in each cup, carefully molding it to the inside of the cup. Spray each dough cup with nonfat cooking spray and repeat layering until you have four layers. So picture this. You've got four layers of phyllo dough, and you're putting nonstick spray in between each layer.
Okay.
That's what gives you the crunch.
Okay.
Then thaw and drain frozen spinach. Wring it out well by hand, and that is critical. When I do that, I'll take it in a colander and I'll push on it until all of the water comes out, because otherwise it's not going to taste good. Gently whisk together the eggs and egg substitute. Add the spinach, peppers, jalapeno, onion, garlic, salt, and seasoning. Whisk it well. Fill the cups with the egg mixture and make sure the mixture is evenly filled between each of the cups. Each cup mm-hmm. should be almost filled. Then sprinkle a little feta, top with one cherry tomato, bake for 20 minutes, testing it with a knife to make sure the eggs are cooked in the middle. Remove from the oven, cool in the muffin tin, and these can be stored in a tightly sealed container for 5 to 7 days. Well, and you can warm it up in the microwave.
They look so nice.
And we are going to eat this, ladies and gentlemen. Mmm. Mmm. Mmm.
This is very good. Hmm?
Very good. Very crunchy. Phyllo dough is simply excellent.
Mm. It's not a quiche like your mother used to make.
It's wonderful. My mother didn't know quiche from lard.
Very good.
Very, very good. Very, very tasty. Thank you. Thank you, Gabby.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone.
And Zorba, if we want a copy of this recipe.
That's right. You can come to our website at zorbapastor.org. And while you're there, you can search all your favorite Zorba Pastor recipes. That's zorbapastor.org. And remember, you can find us on Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, and a listener with us in Heartland, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. I am a 75-year-old woman, and I'd like to sleep on my side. And when I sleep on my side, my whole lower side goes to sleep. Then I toss on the other side, and that side goes to sleep. So consequently, all night long, I'm tossing from side to side to side. Do you have any answers for that?
Sleep on your back?
Yes, I think that's probably the answer.
Well, it turns out only about 10 to 15% of the people sleep on their back, and most people sleep on their side.
Mm-hmm.
So You know, so you've been sleeping on your side. What exactly? You're waking up throughout the night? Or tell me a little bit about what's going on.
I wake up as soon as my arm goes to sleep. Mm-hmm. Then I wake up, mm-hmm. and then I turn over on the other side.
Is it your wrist or your arm?
It's sort of the outer part. It's the pinky finger and the ring finger that mm-hmm. go to sleep and up, uh-huh. all the way up. So I think it's the ulnar nerve.
Yeah.
I read about it.
Yeah.
And I've straightened my arms, but it still happens mm-hmm. if it's underneath, you know, on the lower arm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things you may have actually is carpal tunnel syndrome. If your wrist and hands fall asleep and they're waking you up, more often than not, it's carpal tunnel. So one of the things that often works for people with carpal tunnel syndrome are night splints on their wrist and on their hands. You put them on, sleep at night, and see if that works. If it works, then it really is carpal tunnel syndrome. And then you have to figure out whether or not you want to wear wrist splints at night, which often do work for people, or whether or not you want to have carpal tunnel surgery to actually fix the problem that's there. But that would be my recommendation. This sounds really like carpal tunnel.
Well, doesn't carpal tunnel bother people other than when they're sleeping?
Sometimes it only bothers them when they sleep. I mean, for some people, because they're putting pressure on the carpal tunnel, when you're laying on your side and you're putting your hands up, you often will put pressure on that carpal tunnel, leave your hand in a very stable position, and that stable position with pressure on it can produce the pain and discomfort. You can tell if it's carpal tunnel by getting an EMG, M as in Mary, EMG, and that'll tell you. But really, the issue is what the symptomatology is like.
If it kind of goes to sleep, isn't that just the blocking of the blood?
Well, it could be, you know, it could be the ulnar nerve, which is your funny bone, in which case often pillows will make a difference there. If that doesn't work, there actually is surgery where they actually move the nerve over, and that also helps it. But I think right out of the box, I'd put on the wrist splints. It's cheap, it's inexpensive, and if it works, then you'll know what it is. So it's sort of a diagnostic and therapeutic modality to see what this is.
Yeah, because I have nothing during the day. It doesn't bother me at all.
Do you sit on the computer all day long?
No.
Well, you see, if you sit on the computer all day long, it might bother you.
I have a picture of somebody sitting on a computer.
But that's pretty funny, Tom. But I do knit a lot. I knit a lot.
You knit a lot, and that does not bother you.
Every night for a couple hours.
It's not the knitting often will not bother people with carpal tunnel. It's often putting your hand and wrist down on a flat surface. So this sounds like carpal tunnel. Try the splints, see what happens, and let us know.
Okay. Very good.
And thanks for the call.
Thank you, and we love your program.
How nice.
Thank you.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hey, Zorba, how are you?
Good, thank you. How can we help you?
Great. Well, I have maybe a simple question about cold sores. I've never really had those before, but recently turned 40, and it seems like everything falls apart then. And occasionally I would have them, but now I have some cold sores on my lip much more frequently than ever before. I'd always heard that they were actually a version of the herpes virus, and that seems like a scary word. And so I just wanted to throw that out there and see if you could help me out.
Yeah, before Zorba does just that, I have some bad news for you. If you think everything falls apart at 40, just wait.
I love it. Just wait. I love it. I love it. Just wait. Just wait. But let's talk about cold sores. There's some cold sores which are called aphthous ulcers. They're generally in the mouth. They look like little ulcerations within the mouth. They often have a gray little coating. But herpes, cold sores, there's herpes virus type 1 and type 2. Type 2 is below the belt. Type 1 is above the belt. Those are sores where you know a day or two before they're going to come. And they're little satellites, little bumps that occur on the lips, and they erupt over a period of about 5 or 6 days, and they disappear by about 10 days. Is that how long these sores last?
Roughly, yes. That's the second version is what I've experienced.
Okay. So they are very common. In fact, over 95% of us have had cold sores at one time or another. For many people, they come and they stop. They get one or two episodes and they're done. And for other people, they just keep on recurring again and again and again. And the thing about those cold sores is we have very, very effective medication for it. Now, for some people, it's brought up when they go outside, when they eat hot, spicy food, when they go on a ski trip. Have you figured out what brings these on?
Honestly, it kind of seems to be stress.
Okay. Stress does it? Stress does
okay.
it? That's one of
okay.
Now, do you know a day or two before they erupt that they're going to erupt so you have a feeling they're going to erupt?
Yeah, it's kind of a tingly pressure type of feeling, yeah.
So. Okay, that's exactly it. The drugs I would recommend, there are a couple of drugs. They're all in the same class, acyclovir, A-C-Y-C-L-O-V, as in Victor I-R. Acyclovir is a generic drug. The other drug is Valtrex, V as in Victor, A-L-T-R-E-X. And there are two other drugs within this class, too. And what you do is you can take them prophylactically before the sore is going to occur, or you can take them when the sore feels like it's going to erupt and you can stop the eruption. They work very, very well. So I recommend you call your doc, you get one of these medications for your cold sores, and frankly, this will change your life because, as you know, they're kind of yucky to look at. They're painful.
Right.
They're very uncomfortable when they occur under stress, and the stress gets even worse. So
yes, very good. Since this appears to be the herpes one, is what's the danger of that transmitting below the belt? Is that something
not
you
at all
really careful of?
Not at all. Stays above the belt. Stays above the belt. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It's always good to get some wisdom and some insight. So thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you very much for the call. Very diplomatic. Below the belt.
Below the belt activity. And above the belt. Didn't you love it?
Yeah.
Above the belt.
Activity.
Below the belt. Above the belt. This is public radio. We stand on ceremony.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. Before we take a short break, Zorba, it's time now to serve up some more of your four-cent advice. Our customer today is Catherine in Buffalo, New York, who's one of many listeners seeking some flu foresight. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I love listening to your show every week. I have a question for you about my daughter. She's 28 years old and 3 months pregnant with her first child. Now, her OB doctors want her to get a flu shot. She's been a preschool teacher for 6 years and has never gotten the flu. She has also never had a flu shot. She is resisting getting the shot, but her doctors bring it up every month. What's your opinion? Should she get the shot? Thanks for your response."
Get the shot. That's absolutely my opinion. CDC says there's no doubt about it. It's a dead vaccine. It does not harm the baby. And the fact is, influenza is awful. And if we look at the present influenza epidemic, pregnant women are especially at risk for getting influenza. And even though you never got it years ago, doesn't mean you're not going to get it today. And the fact is, it's a serious disease for a woman who's pregnant. And the doctor is absolutely right to bring it up every time. And you, as the mom, should also bring it up and say, "Hey, I heard it on the radio. Get your flu shot, honey. Do you want me to drive you there?"
So your four-cent advice is the same as the 2 cents worth that she's already
Absolutely.
Gotten.
I was trying to figure out where that 4 cent came from.
That's what it is.
Trying to figure that out.
People get their 2 cents
That's
worth.
Right.
And then
now I get 4 cents
and you
worth.
Give them the 4 cent
I love
advice.
It.
Need Zorba to take a shot at your doc's 2 cents? Just send your concerns along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some more interesting research to talk over, some more of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster. Stick around with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, some research suggesting that thinking about stress causes stress?
Well, thinking about stress causes stress, and that stress causes heart disease. And it's a fascinating study published in the American Journal of Cardiology that I think has lots of merit. And it fits with some of the concepts that I developed years ago when I wrote my book, The Longevity Code, and looked at the balance in the five spheres of life that make a difference: physical, mental, family, and social, spiritual, and material. So these were studies. It was a study of studies. And they looked at participants who self-reported intense frequent feelings of stress. In other words, so these were studies that occurred over quite a long time, over a 14-year period. And when you're diagnosed, you may have been hospitalized. You know, did you have stress in your life, stress at home, stress at work? Mm-hmm. And it was part of sort of a follow-up of what was going on with people with high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and so on. And what they found was that people who reported high levels of stress had a 27% higher risk of developing coronary artery disease than people who did not. So then they look back at what was actually going on in their lives. So certainly a high level of stress would be there if you lost your job, you had no money, and you were going to lose your house. That's clearly a high level of stress. But if you were worried about losing your job but you never lost it, that was also, if some people perceive that as a very high level of stress, where other people looked at it and they said, well, I'll deal with it when it happens.
Yeah.
That turned out to be the key issue. Whoa. The people who worried during their life while life was going on had a higher rate of heart disease than people who simply didn't worry but still had some of the same issues that were going on.
Yeah, that doesn't shock me, but it kind of put stress on me because I worry about
you
things
worry.
All
no,
the
no,
time.
Yeah. Now, it's quite interesting because this fits with some of the data on the type A and type B personality and the idea that the type A was a hard-driving person and they were going to get more heart attacks. And it turned out not at all. The hard-driving people who worried all the time had more heart attacks and felt stressed all the time.
Yeah.
So I think this is an issue of looking back at the benefits of yoga, the benefits of stress reduction therapy, the benefits of meditation, and I don't mean meditation in a religious way, but of calming your mind, of contemplative science. And I think it shows that this may have over a long-term benefit, especially for people that worry.
How about working out?
I think working out makes a big difference. And I think that's probably one of the things that makes a big difference on why exercise prevents heart disease and stroke. It's not just feeding the physical body. It's that working out allows you to feel good, and allowing you to feel good will then reduce your mental stress.
1-800-462-7413. And to the phones again, Zorba, a listener with us now in College Station, Texas. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
I have been working on losing weight and have been fairly successful. And what I find myself doing in the mornings is I eat a bunch of fruit and some low-fat cottage cheese. And that's also when I normally take my vitamins. So I'm basically having absolutely no fat in the morning, and I'm taking vitamins, some of which are fat-soluble. So my question is, you know, should I switch to something with a little bit of fat in it to help to, you know, absorb those vitamins?
Oh, not at all, not at all. Fat-soluble vitamins are, that's a term, but it doesn't mean you have to have fat in order to make the vitamins soluble in your body. Although, you know, you bring up a great point. I've never thought about that, in that fat-soluble vitamins give the implication that this will dissolve.
Yeah.
You have to have fat in your diet to actually dissolve it. Vitamins A, vitamin K, vitamin D, vitamin E are called fat-soluble vitamins, and that actually means that they're stored in the body in fat. And so they tend to last longer. So you can get, we'll say, a vitamin A shot. It'll stay there for a while. And it really has to do with where they are, essentially, where they're stored in the body, whereas the water-soluble vitamins, which are basically the B vitamins and vitamin C, are water-soluble, and they don't stay in the body for more than, we'll say, a day or a certain amount of time. So the fat-soluble is a term used for how the vitamin is looked at by your body, but not for how you're actually, that you need actually fat in your diet. I have a couple of questions. I think that sounds like a great breakfast. What do you do for lunch?
Well, I mean, usually between lunch and breakfast, I'll have I have 20 almonds.
Uh-huh. Well, what's wrong with almonds? Almonds
are great. And then I'll have some low-sodium turkey and, like, a light thing of soup.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually walk out of lunch having only had like 500 or 600 calories.
Uh-huh. So you have 20 almonds?
Yeah, I hate
one,
to say, I have to stand
two,
there and count them.
So you count your almonds. Okay.
Count my almonds because it's 75 calories.
Oh, that's okay. So you want to keep your weight under control. What's your height? What's your weight?
Right now I'm 195, and I am, well, on the way down. Uh-huh. I used to be 5'11". I'm now like 5'9".
Uh-huh. And, on the way down.
So I'm no longer obese, but I've got to get down. It says to like 170 before I'm not considered overweight.
Well,
there
are some very interesting issues about overweight. What is overweight? You know, we've got this concept of a BMI of 25. I don't know where that came from, by the way. But you're obviously on the way down from a weight point of view, so you're controlling your weight with this. I mean, I commend you with that.
Yeah, I really don't eat food any longer. I just eat numbers.
Uh-huh. You just eat numbers. I love it. I love it. Well, congratulations. I think you're doing a terrific job. And there's a book there somewhere. Don't eat food. Eat numbers.
Well, thanks a lot.
Sure. Thank you. We appreciate
Take
the
care.
Call. 800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, time again now for our medical myth buster. We've all seen those commercials claiming that sugar-free gums are good for your teeth. But is that a medical fact or a marketing scheme?
Well, it's definitely a marketing scheme. I think sugar-free gum isn't bad for your teeth. I think that's the way to look at it.
Yeah.
So first of all, sugar-free gum is not bad for your teeth. So in other words, it doesn't have sugar in it. And we know that sugar sitting around the teeth all the time leads to tooth decay.
Right.
So we know that that's bad for your teeth. But for years, a number of companies sort of claimed, quasi-claimed, was that when they contained xylitol, xylitol is a natural sweetener that we know fights cavity bacteria. In other words, the bacteria that cause cavities are fought by xylitol, that it actually, if you chew sugar-free gum, you're actually going to prevent cavities. I think that's a little bit murky, very, very murky. And in fact, there was a study recently that came out that looked at about 700 adults from dental clinics around the country for 3 years. Either they consume xylitol lozenges, okay?
Yeah.
In other words, the xylitol lozenges, or they had placebo lozenges 5 times a day. So it's not gum, it's lozenges, and there was no reduction in cavities. So in other words, the one group had xylitol in their mouth all the time, the other group did not, and
it didn't make any difference.
So I think chewing gum may help. It may be beneficial because sometimes it can help with plaque and with acid. But I think the xylitol just isn't sugar, and therefore it's helpful. But I don't think there is a significant difference in what it does
but
to your teeth.
But if I'm a sugar-free gum manufacturer,
yes,
I'm still going to say chew my gum because it's better for your teeth, meaning
it's better than sugar gum. Now, remember, if you're a gum manufacturer, you manufacture both sugar gum and sugar-free gum.
That's true.
So remember, it's kind of both.
Just send your myth along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7000. 413. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Palm Coast, Florida. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I have a question that has to do with sugars and more towards like the natural form of sugars. I hear and read a lot about like agave syrup and rice syrup and things like that. Mm-hmm. And what I'm wondering is if these natural sugars are any better for you than like your regular white granulated sugar in how your body processes it, but also as far as weight loss.
Well, first of all, sugar in certain ways, sugar is sugar is sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a carbohydrate, easily digested, and it has calories. And all sugar that we eat for the most part is natural. Now, if we look at Splenda, which is a manufactured sugar type thing that has no calories, it's not exactly sugar. That we're going to put that off to the side. We're not going to talk about that because that's not the issue. But honey Agave, like you say, juice, all these, they're essentially distilled from carbohydrate. The sugar that we get in this country mostly is cane sugar. Mm-hmm. So it's sugar cane, and you've seen pictures of sugar cane, and, you know, it's taken out from, you know, it's essentially manufactured from that. Or it's beet sugar. It comes from beets, which are also very sweet. Or it may come from fruits and vegetables. So if you have grape juice for the most part is really just sugar, yep. You know, with grape flavoring. Grape juice is very, very sweet. And the agave and the other sugars are the same. So from a weight loss point of view, it's a function of carbohydrates. And if you eat as many calories of one, you are going to gain as much weight as you eat as many calories from the other. Now, they promo it because it's a marketing tool. Our sugar is more natural because it comes from here. Their sugar is less natural because it comes from there. But in fact, it's pretty much the same thing.
It's really not easier for your body to process one or the other.
Not at all. The body processes sugar, by the way, instantly. It's really quick at processing sugar. It's like an instantaneous. That's why it goes into the bloodstream right away, produces a spike of blood sugar in the body, and then your pancreas has to shoot out adrenaline. And that's one of the issues with sugar and why diabetics have to stay away from sweet things. The other issue is that if there's another taste with the sugar, like with honey, you may have less of it because you like the taste. In other words, honey does not taste the same as table sugar, and therefore, if you use less, you'll have fewer calories and you may weigh less, and that's really the issue that I think is at hand.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for your call, and thanks for bringing this up.
That's
it's a good
interesting
topic.
Thing about honey and sugar. That makes sense.
Right.
You
right.
like the taste of honey, and so you're
you may eat less.
Satisfied. Mm-hmm. Before you eat more of it.
You got it.
Interesting. Well, before we head out for the week, Zorba, let's share a quick listener tip from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This spicy solution comes to us from Margie, who wants to help our listeners who suffer from arthritis. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I have tried many things for the inflammation and pain. I already take naproxen twice a day, but was surprised to find that a turmeric capsule once a day actually helped quite a bit. It probably doesn't work for everyone, but it might be worth a try."
Mm-hmm. Well, I think supplements are worth a try to see if they work. My recommendation is sort of to follow the lead of Consumer Reports, which says try it. 6 weeks to 3 months, if it doesn't seem to work, then stop. And the placebo effect, if that's what you're getting from it, you know, you think it works, and therefore it works, and the placebo effect is incredibly powerful, which shows mind over body and how it matters. The placebo effect tends to disappear over time.
Yeah.
So if you're going to try it for 3 months to see if it makes a difference, and if so, hey, stick with it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a tasty trick that helps you curry on? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. This show was produced by Gabrielle Pedriani. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our technical director is Brad Colbert. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0202Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.